everybody. Welcome to a Monday edition of Your Bulldog Hour. Gonzo alongside, as always, here until 3, and then CG and Gonzo with Crisper Gabriel, programmed to 6 o'clock tonight. No play-by-play today on either station, 940 or 790, but through ESPN Radio and still through the A's network, if the A's can hang in there for a while, it will be Major League Baseball coverage of both wild card games, the divisional series, the league championship series, and the World Series. So it'd be real nice if the A's could move along beyond this week. We'll see, or actually be more particularly, before we get greedy for Friday, which is when the divisional series would start in New York. The A's have to get by the Rays at the Coliseum on Wednesday, 5 o'clock, the start for us. Tomorrow it will be the NL wild card as the Brewers are in D.C. to play the Nationals, and we'll see how it plays out. And goodness knows, I keep hearing from you Dodger fans out there, and all I can tell you is congratulations on 7 consecutive NL West titles, and also your sweep over the weekend against a highly motivated Giants squad that was busy looking for where they were going to be hanging out in October. Certainly not at a baseball diamond near you. So I'll see if the Dodgers can finally break a 31-season jinx. Well, see, I'm counting this. Never mind. We've been through it before, and all it does is cause more problems for me with you guys in blue. So good luck to you. Remember 1988. That's all I'm telling you. And if it means anything, I am pulling against you so hard that maybe the opposite effect will take place. All right, a lot to do today with our good friend Paul Leppler, voice of your Bulldogs. So let's bring Paul up right now and get started with not only Fresno State football, but a few other notes from Bulldog alums of recent years. Paul, how you doing?
Hey, doing great, Tony. Beautiful weather we've had the last couple of days. Man, I just met some folks at the park yesterday who just moved to town, and they were asking if the weather's always like this. Not exactly, but enjoy it while it lasts.
Well, you finished that with, yes, it's always like this time of year. You keep going, because we've said it over and over again. There's in this town, there's nothing better than rolling into fall, because it is the absolute nicest time of the year, and we don't have a real bad winter. However, when we start to head back toward May, it does get interesting. I think we all know that. But cherish it, and hopefully people are going to come out and watch football at every level, high school, and particularly Fresno State in a few weeks when the Bulldogs are back home against UNLV. Before we talk about what happened Saturday night in Las Cruces, Paul, I do want to mention a couple other Bulldogs of recent vintage. One, Paul George will not be playing when the Clips and Warriors are opening up the Chase Center in the 24th of the month, I think, is what we'll have for in October still, because we're still in September. So he will be okay, but they're going to be very careful with him. Also want to mention that our good friend Nick Watney had a top 10 finish up in Napa as Nick continues to get himself back to full strength. The Nick Watney Invitational, by the way, coming up at Fresno State on the 27th and all that kind of stuff. So it has rolled through this time of year. And, Paul, I do want to bring up Aaron Judge to you because Aaron Judge had his rookie mark knocked out already home run-wise. Do we have a juice baseball going? Is that what's happening here?
Well, there's something going on. It certainly has been easier to hit home runs this year. So, yeah, that's what makes it so hard to compare from year to year. If you have changes in the ball, if, there are other things going on. Certainly we lived through the 90s and the early 2000s, so I don't have to go into further detail there. But I'm just ready to watch Aaron Judge go win the World Series. And, it's just so fun to see him healthy, doing everything that he does. Anybody that asks me about it, when they're raving about how far he hits home runs, and he does. I mean, he just destroys them. But there is nothing I enjoy more than watching him throw the ball from the outfield. I mean, his range is remarkable. Everything he does, because he's so huge and he has such great body control, he does it in a way that makes you feel like it's effortless. But you know it's not. You know how dedicated he is, how much time he's put in, how focused he is. And all those things that he does physically really are exceeded by who he is, how intentional he is as a person, what he stands for, the impact he wants to have not just on people now, but for generations to come. And that's why he's one of those guys you just can't say enough about, that you're always going to be proud. He's a Bulldog, that he's from the Valley, that he's giving back to the Valley. And look forward to hearing more about that last part here in the near future.
Right. By the way, I should mention with the Watney invite, 2-day event through tomorrow at Fort Washington. And I know that Nick is a great supporter of Bulldog sports and Bulldog golf in particular. I mentioned he was up in Napa playing well. So if you have a chance today and tomorrow at Fort Washington, please take in that three-round event. Starts at 8:45 again tomorrow in the morning. I guess that's pretty obvious, Paul, unless we're going to circle the course with our cars, right? Like the old days when you go play ball. You ever do that? Go to the playgrounds to play ball at night. We used to do it at Einstein, and you had to turn your car lights on so you could play. Did you ever do that with any sport?
Oh, sure. Yeah, and if it was full court, you really like shooting at the one bucket that was opposite the lights as opposed to shooting into the lights.
Einstein on Sundays used to be closed, but the tennis courts were open. And so what you would do is you'd put the quarters in the tennis court lights to illuminate one of the two baskets adjacent to it. And all that would happen is a whole bunch of people would come and play tennis because you're the guy paying for the lights. That's what used to happen all the time. I don't know how many more basketball players we drew on a Sunday night, but I know the tennis people saw us coming a mile away. They said, just wait for the basketball idiots to come out there, and we'll get to play tennis without having to pay for the lights. So it works out. This is not the case for Fort Washington. Daytime for golf, both today and tomorrow. All right, Paul, one other thing I want to ask you about before we talk about Saturday past. Gavin Newsom signed the bill right there in LeBron James land. We talk about the Fair Pay for Play Act. I've talked about it with CG, with Cam, with everybody. Paul, there has been a thought directing it at Fresno State that this kind of thing could be injurious to Fresno State long term. I've always been in favor of the athletes being paid. You know the case being made, which is for a school like Fresno State, if athletes can be directly contacted and can endorse with local sponsorship, it might cause that sponsorship to bypass putting money in the coffers of Fresno State as a whole. Are you concerned about that?
Well, I mean, I don't... First of all, it's 4 years away that it goes into effect. Who knows how the college
January
sports landscape will change.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. That said, at this point, I mean, you'd be risking NCAA membership by doing it because the NCAA has not approved that and is not on board. And, you know, you could lose. It would be counterproductive if you lose the opportunity to compete intercollegiately just so a few of your players can – make a few dollars. I really don't see it being a solution to an issue. I think if anything, it muddies the water even more, makes it, just in my mind, this is just my opinion, I think it probably makes some legislators feel like they did something, but I don't think it does anything at all other than create more confusion and maybe fan the flames of this tension, because coaches in the college football landscape get paid so much money. And the players' compensation comes in the way of scholarships, of tuition. Now they have cost of attendance. That was the last threshold that was passed, you know, so more of their expenses can be covered. They live at some of these big schools, you know, they live almost a resort-style existence. They're catered to. They have a lot of luxuries at the big schools. At Fresno State, there are some really nice things that this program has built, but it's not the same life that you're going to have at Alabama or Clemson or USC. You're not, to use a maybe not the best word, but you're not spoiled to that extent as you might be at some of those larger schools. But I think all this bill does, again, in my opinion, and I'm not a political animal. I have friends on both sides of the aisle, and I try to keep it that way. But this was a Democrat or Republican issue in our legislature in the state either. It was unanimous. But I just don't see how it really addresses the problem. I think more than anything, it's a statement to say, hey, NCAA, you guys have to do something about this because there is an inequity here. There are hurt feelings because you're paying your coaches way too much money and your players are getting taken advantage of. But the second you go down that road, there are all these ancillary questions that are almost impossible to solve. So if you have one player that's going to get an endorsement, what happens to the other 104 players on that team? And, you know, how many players on the Fresno State team, for instance, would local businesses want an endorsement deal from? When, you know, and I can say this as someone who voices commercials for different advertisers on our station. If I'm going to voice a commercial for a business, I want to know who I'm representing and what that business stands for. What are their ethics? What do they represent? And those businesses wouldn't want me to read their commercial unless they knew what I represent. So, I mean, how practical is this? How many 18 to 22-year-old kids can a local business really know enough to put money behind and want that young person to represent their business? Now, those are, you know, these coaches recruit outstanding young men. All the coaches are going to tell you that's what they're doing. But when you're talking about 18 to 22-year-old kids, there are a lot of things that can go haywire. There are a lot of things on a college campus that can happen. So, I mean, it's, I just think the aim of this bill, I don't see it ever becoming a practicality in college sports. I think the only thing it's going to do is further the conversation, is put the onus on the NCAA to say, hey, we went ahead and took a step. You're going to have to come up with a solution that works. And, you know, I'm just scratching the surface of the problems with the whole situation, because if you start paying football and basketball players, what do all the other sports say? There are a lot of the vast majority of student athletes in college sports participate in a sport that doesn't even come close to generating the revenue to match the expenses that that sport requires. So the math is not going to add up at any point. The problem is those coaches' salaries are the glaring issue that people are reacting to. So maybe there's a course correction along the lines at some point. You know, and let's just stop talking about it, because I'm just going to go off on tangents here and there and everywhere. But I don't, in my mind, again, just my opinion, that bill does nothing to solve the actual issue. It creates, I think, more angst. And the only positive in my mind that can come out of it is if you end up with some leadership at the NCAA level that says, you know, this is going to be hard. This is not an easy issue. We've kicked the can down the road for decades because there is no obvious solution. But now's the time that we really need to get people together and figure out a better system than what we have now.
Fair enough. I will tell you this, Paul. I'm going to do this. We're going to take the break in just a second, Gonzo, so we can come back and we'll start fresh with Fresno State and not only the New Mexico State game, but everything going forward in the conference. But what you touched upon, I believe, is the case. California is, in many respects, because of the population base and the financial power of this state, I mean, it was 7th largest economy in the world, maybe up to 5th if it were a country in and of itself. The too big to fail applies in this regard. California is too big for the NCAA to ignore. So I agree with you, no matter which side of this you're on, it's going to force discussion that almost assuredly is going to result in a model that is not the one we have now, nor will it be the doomsday scenario that the bill approves. It will be a compromise mandatorily that will be in place by the time we get to 2023. That's my hope anyway, because if California and Florida and Texas, for instance, decide they're going their own way, the NCAA has a real big problem. So I don't think it's coming to that. All right, we'll take a break, come back with Paul, and we will talk about Fresno State, New Mexico State, and everything going forward with Jeff Tedford and the team. Take a break on 50,000 Watt 940 ESPN. Everybody, welcome back. 221 Bulldog Hour to 3, CGP to 6. No play-by-play either station tonight, but we start Major League Baseball's real season tomorrow. After 162, we start playing when they actually count every game. NL Wild Card, 5 o'clock tomorrow, Brewers at the Nationals. And then for us on Wednesday, the one close to home, the A's will host the Rays. That game will be also at 5. We will have the A's feed for you. The rest of the coverage all the way through the World Series will be either the A's network to a certain amount of time if they're still in, but definitely ESPN Radio all the way through the World Series. All right, let's bring Paul back in. Paul, as you and I start to talk football, and the Bulldogs, I did want to mention that, as expected, our good friend Josh Allen, we hope he's okay to everybody in the west side of the valley, in particular in Firebar, thoughts with him. He is in concussion protocol. His status for this week against the Titans uncertain, but it's mainly his health that we're worried about beyond whether he's playing this week or not. And it was a very, very tough and illegal hit, but I guess that's a topic for a little bit later today. Paul, let's talk about what happened Saturday night. The good that you took out of Saturday night, because I know in Bulldogs Live there was a lot in regard to feedback, both calls and emails, saying, you know what, the Bulldogs should be more dominant. How do you feel about it?
Well, they're right. You know, they should be. That's the expectation. That's certainly the expectation the coaching staff has. And the talent level is there to get to that point. And when you see them, you know, take a 24-3 lead, you want to see them finish the job. And I think what it underscores more than anything is the importance of ball security. I mean, in the last two games, there was a fumble at a key time that changed the game. And, you know, in the Sac State game, Fresno State's ahead 14-6 early. It looks like it's going to be a runaway. All of a sudden, you turn it over while you're driving, and Sac State makes it a game. And in this situation, unfortunately, the same young man coughs the football up, and it gave New Mexico State some life. And the Aggies grabbed that momentum, and they made it more of a game than it needed to be. That said, I think there are a lot of bright spots, and I think we have to remember, you know, what Fresno State's dealing with on the offensive line, with its best linemen out, with no consistency as far as having the same five guys out there from week to week. And that's a work in progress. And that's also a position group where you've had a coaching alteration in the offseason, where the O-line coach now has the added duty of being offensive coordinator, and you brought in a new assistant offensive line coach that's getting used to those guys. So I'm confident that over time they'll find some answers and that group will grow together. And hopefully, you know, in my mind, it would be really nice to have Natane Muti back for that gauntlet of games in November that are really going to decide whether right. this is a championship season or just a bowl season. So that'll make a difference there. You know, that was the biggest cause of concern for me, was that they weren't able to run the ball better. And you look at the rushing yards, you say, wait a second, they ran for almost 240 yards. Yeah, but that was wide receivers and a little bit of the quarterback, and the running backs were not as effective as you expect them to be. After Josh Hokett's first touchdown run, which was another impressive effort, bulldozing people into pay dirt, they really didn't have a lot going in the run game, and the holes just weren't there. So that is cause for concern. The bright spots, I mean, let's start with Amorie Edwards. Here's a young man who in the spring, you watched him in those scrimmages, you said, man, this kid is going to be their star wideout this fall, and then he gets hurt at the start of fall camp, and they haven't had him at all for those first three games. And if you watch the catches he made Saturday night against New Mexico State, I mean, for one, you're just excited that a young man from the Valley who turned down bigger schools to stay home finally has a chance to play and contribute. Then you watch the way he did it, how physical he was, you know, the degree of difficulty on some of those catches, holding on to the football despite getting smacked, not too differently from the way Josh Allen got hit yesterday. That's a big-time player. He could have helped Fresno State against USC and Minnesota. That might have helped get him over the top. But they're really excited to have him, and I think he gave us just a taste of what he's capable of. He's not alone. Look at what Jalen Cropper did in a week where, you know, he was sore all week, didn't even practice a few days or had to really hold back in practice. And, you know, he looks like Carl Lewis running away on the straightaway in the Olympics. Right. I mean, he was torching them. So those are two freshmen playing in the receiving corps. Jamal Glaspie has that same kind of potential as another freshman, and you can go down the list. And a guy who'd been one of their best receivers, Chris Coleman, moves over to corner, which he hasn't played in a few years, and looked like he'd been playing there all year. And, you know, his reaction time was great, his instincts. If you talk to the coaching staff, they say he's as natural a corner as anybody on their team. They had no doubt he could play that position, and look at how he caught up from a mental perspective, learning that position, learning the calls, and really performing well. And so now they have a guy who they can trust out there, who has all the physical tools to get it done, and who can still help them on offense when they need them. So I mean, those developments there, the young receiving core stepping up and the addition of Edwards into that mix, as well as Coleman showing that he can get it done on the defensive side of the ball, I think that does make a difference. And the other thing that, you know, I noticed, if you watch closely, you saw Michael Walker moving around a lot. In some parts of the game, he's on the defensive line, and Lavelle Bailey right. is, you know, in the middle of that D. And that may be something we see more of, because if Walker, you know, down on the line can give him a more potent pass rush or just make that front four more effective, it's not as big a drop-off to go from him to Bailey in that, you know, second line of defense, and it may be an upgrade for the team. So it's one of those things they can play with. It's something they could use to keep offenses off guard. You know, I thought that was a real positive to see that unfold that way. And I guess another positive, which was expected, which is exactly what Coach Tedford predicted and told us would happen, was that Cesar Silva was nails on all his kicks. And, you know, if you were concerned after the Sac State game because he pushed all three of those right, he certainly straightened it out in this game, and I think he's going to be a weapon and a consistent weapon for this team in some games where they may need him. If you look at eight straight conference games in 8 weeks with some real tough situations on the road against quality programs, there are going to be some games where you're going to need a clutch kick, and to see him go out there and handle his part of the game the way he did was encouraging.
Paul, I had mentioned last week that even going into the game at New Mexico State, to a degree, this season has sort of reminded me of 2008 in that the Bulldogs at one point were 5-2, but the five wins were such that, and there were some good wins at Rutgers and naturally the one at UCLA, but so many of those five were could have gone the other way. You know, the big-time field goal at Utah State, that strange decision by Amstutz at Toledo in double overtime. You know, even the losses, a loss in OT to Hawaii, a game here against Wisconsin that if the field goal kicking were more solid, the Bulldogs might win it. And we were wondering what that team was really all about, even 7 weeks in. So we went into November, said, you know, they're 5-2, but are they good or are they not? And they ended up losing, as you know, four of their last six, and it was an okay season, but they did lose the bowl game, etc. So it was kind of like a season of unfulfilled expectation. To me, this season is sort of reminding me of the start of that one, in that this is a team, the Bulldogs, that could easily be 4-0 right now. But even if they were, Paul, we would still wonder what this conference holds. So I will ask you, 2-2, 4-0, 3-1, anything that could have been in between, where they are now, do you have any degree of certainty of what this team is going to do for the ensuing 8 weeks without a break in conference coming up after the bye?
No, I think this team has a lot left to prove. And, you know, the first people they have to prove it to is to themselves. And, you know, I guess we could have anticipated some of that going into the year. You look at how many people they have to replace, how many inexperienced players are going to be relied on heavily. We couldn't have anticipated the drastic number of injuries that they've had to absorb and overcome. I mean, nobody saw that coming. It really has affected the depth at running back. It has made that offensive line, you know, take longer to gel. And that may be a process that takes a few more weeks. I think this bye is well-timed, especially since they, you know, are coming off back-to-back victories. They've gotten some other players more experience, and they've shown some signs of combinations that can really do some damage. I think it's good to have the bye week now, in addition to the extra time to prepare for Air Force and the uniqueness of what the Falcons do. But yeah, that story is not told, and there is not a game on this schedule that's going to be easy. The two games they just had were supposed to be the easy ones on the schedule.
Yeah.
And those both still had at least a shred of doubt in the fourth quarter. So, you know, if those were the easy games, what lies ahead is going to be stickier. And there are going to be a couple of those games, those eight games. There's going to be a blowout where the Bulldogs pull away from somebody and finish the job early. It's going to happen. But I would say, you know, a realistic expectation says most of those games are going to be fourth quarter games, are going to be games where someone's going to have to rise to the occasion and make a play with a whole lot of pressure. And, you know, Jorge Reyna is four games more experienced than he was at the start of the year, and he can bring all that to bear. You know, as much as the injuries have affected the offensive line, guys are getting experience. They're working through it. They're seeing things you can't do and finding some things that do work. I think just like last week, we talked about, you know, the reemergence of Josh Hokett being a significant development. That didn't change the other day. You know, he showed his physicality again. He didn't have quite the numbers and quite the dominating effect, you know, as far as the whole game, as maybe you wanted him to after what you saw in the fourth quarter against Sac State. But he's going to continue to do a weapon. And I don't think we've really scratched the surface of what this offense can do yet. I mean, these coaches know what they're doing. They have a huge repertoire of plays. We've seen some of them. We've seen what some of them set up and the different combinations that come off of them, but we haven't seen all of it. We still haven't seen a tight end position that's actually as talented and deep as any tight end group we've seen here in the last 20 years. We haven't seen that tight end group really exploited as far as putting the ball in their hands. Now, they did an outstanding job blocking the other day, but, you know, we know what they can do catching the football, and those days are going to come for those young men as well. So there's a lot that we haven't seen that I think we will see over the last 2 months of the season. But I have to agree with you that there is a question mark. We don't know how it's going to go. I think we can have confidence because of the track record of Jeff Tedford and his coaching staff. We can have confidence because we've seen the character of these young men and the toughness that they put on display. And we can have confidence seeing local recruits that are getting a chance to shine and are doing it. And I don't think that is a small consideration. And you brought up, you know, the 2008 parallel. We were talking the other day on the broadcast about 2002. That was our this date in Bulldog football history. It was
right.
Almost the same scenario. At that point, you had a team that was 1-3 that had lost heartbreakers on the road against top 25 teams. I mean, they played USC and Minnesota this year. Those weren't top 25 teams. They played at Oregon and at Wisconsin in 02, and they had a chance to win both of them and lost. So here's a team, you know, just like this year's team that had come close to some big wins, didn't get them, and faced a road game where it could have gotten away from them at Rice. But they pulled through there, and they finished by winning 8 of their last 10 games. They got Pat his first bowl win against Georgia Tech that year, and they carried that momentum that really kept building for the next 2 years going into that 05 season, which, you know, how many times have we dissected that, and especially November 19th of that year. So could it be a 2008 where you had the games you just described? Could it be a 2002 or a 2004? I think time will tell. Well, we know time will tell. But I think there are plenty of signs out there to give you hope, to give you optimism, to say, you know, good things are happening, even if that big picture isn't as pretty as the red wave would like.
That's fair, Paul. And I will tell you this, and we have this discussion because it's every year, because it's applicable in every conference. And when you're in a divisional setup, it is further illustrated by what we see across the country, that you can almost look at certain divisions in these large conferences and predict on the basis of not who you play, because you're playing the same teams within division, but rather where you're going to play them, how teams are going to fare. Meaning, if by luck of the draw, you get the tougher teams in your division at home and the lesser teams on the road where you're going to maybe win anyway, you can be a lot better off than taking the same schedule and getting the tougher clubs, period, on the road where it's so difficult to win now because you're at their place, and you still have the same advantage because you're better than the lesser team. So, in other words, it depends on who goes where. I make this argument because I would say to you that this year, UNLV and Nevada are two games that I think Fresno State would win if they were in the state of Nevada. However, the Bulldogs would have a much better task in front of them if Hawaii and San Diego State were to be coming here, which is not the case, which is my way of saying to you, how tough is it going to be when those teams, which are really tough, are going to be road games, and those are probably going to be the most critical games of the year within division?
No question. I mean, if you look at November, get your tickets now. Every one of those games is going to mean a whole lot for Fresno State. And, you know, and that is assuming that you take care of business going into November. So UNLV is not going to be a cakewalk when the Rebels come here on the 18th of October. You know, we've talked quite a bit about the Air Force game to open conference play in 2 weeks. You know, getting Colorado State here at home. Look at the fight they gave Utah State the other night, forcing a bunch of turnovers. But those games in November, at Hawaii, home against Utah State, on the road on a Friday night at San Diego State, with that outstanding defense, home against a Nevada team that, yeah, got slaughtered by Hawaii, but, you know, beat Purdue earlier this year. And then, you know, wrapping it all up against the San Jose State team that went on the road and defeated Arkansas. So those five games in November are, I think they're all going to be thrillers. They're all going to feel like championship games, and it may turn out that way. If they win, you know, a championship game on November 2nd, they get another chance the next week, and so on and so forth. They're going to mean a lot, but you're right. I mean, going to Hawaii right now looks like a pretty imposing proposition, because the Bows are playing outstanding football. And if you look at the way Fresno State's offense right now is still trying to find its identity and figure out who it is and how it's going to play, it's hard to imagine that offense outscoring Hawaii's offense. You know, at this point you'd say, boy, you're going to need to force some turnovers, and it's going to be who wins that turnover battle that wins that game. But we're not there yet, Tony. We haven't even hit October yet, not quite. And, you know, the Bulldogs know what they're in for at Air Force and how challenging of a situation that's going to be. So this coaching staff does a great job of keeping them in the moment, of finding teachable moments within a game. There were plenty of those Saturday in Las Cruces. But, again, there are also some of those moments that say, yeah, that's why you were recruited here, and that's why you turned down those other schools to stay home in the Valley, because you can be something special in this program. And it's exciting to see players, especially really young players, start to show that potential.
Well, one of the among many things that came up in Bulldogs Live, and of course we had the benefit of being finally earlier in the evening, which, by the way, will also happen at Colorado Springs, because that is a 4 o'clock kick our time, 5 o'clock there. So we are going to be on even earlier with Bulldogs Live, as opposed to, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning, which is what happens a lot of times with the 7:30 starts here. But Paul, the question came up a lot, which was, were the Bulldogs actually better as a team in the two losses than they were, given the competition, in the two wins? Or do you say the team made progress? It's a very difficult thing to quantify when the level of competition is different. How do you view it after four games? Have they moved forward, or were they actually more emotionally up for those first two games?
Well, how can you expect them not to be more emotional?
Well, yeah, but I mean, as far as what equated to four quarters on the field, not rolling into the facility where naturally your heart's going to be beating a little bit faster those first two. But just, you know, like the old John Madden line, right? Momentum only is applicable till you're staring out your ear hole, right? Then you realize you're in a game regardless. Did this team respond, I guess, the best way to ask it, the last 2 weeks, the way you saw them respond the first two?
Well, I think they did grow. And, you know, here's how they grew. They finished. They knew that was what they didn't do in the first two games, that the opportunity was there in both of them. They had a chance to win both of those games, and they didn't. And, you know, the easy target, if you're looking for a culprit, a reason that they didn't, was the turnover battle. So, you know, they cleaned that up the last couple of weeks. Were they flawless? No. But if you look at Jorge Reyna, he did not turn the ball over in those two games. That's progress. Yes, the opponent is different. That brings its own challenges. You know, as anybody who played at that level will tell you, it is hard to get up, especially when you're on the road against a stadium that isn't even quite half full. And, you know, and then you score fairly easily on your first drive, and you can get lulled to sleep. And, you know, you hear those things, they become cliches over and over and over again, but it's amazing how accurate they are, especially with an inexperienced team, with guys who are doing the exact thing they're doing for really the first time. So what you hope is that those lessons are learned, that it doesn't happen again. And I think we have the potential to see that happening with this group. So I think progress was made, and that they finished the job, they got wins. They took better care of the football. The quarterback wasn't turning it over with decisions that he would regret. So that's learning. That's progress. You know, that's a step in the right direction, especially when you consider that it's happening, again, amidst the backdrop of injury after injury after injury. And again, in this game, you know, Carrick Wheat falls finally back in the fold. You get to see an inkling of his potential in a big game against Sac State. And then, you know, he goes out early in this game against New Mexico State on a play where he's going to have a touchdown if they don't hold him. So, you know, that right there shows you what a weapon he can be. And now, again, he doesn't get to play the rest of the game. And you know, the injuries at running back, on the offensive line, in the secondary where you're down two corners and have to move a receiver to corner. Those are things you can't anticipate going into the year, but this team is working through them. They're not making excuses. They're not saying, you know, woe is me. It's okay. Who else can do this? And give this coaching staff some credit. The move that they made in taking Coleman from the offensive side of the ball to the defensive side of the ball rarely happens at this stage of a college football season anywhere. Not only did they have the guts to do it, not only was Coleman selfless enough to do it because of the culture that they built here at Fresno State, but it worked. If you watch the game, you saw that was a very wise move, and it's going to pay even bigger dividends down the line. And it may turn out, I mean, let's not get ahead of ourselves, Chris Coleman may end up playing that position at the next level. And if so, he's going to look back and say, you know, it was really heartbreaking to see my teammates get injured, but look at the way a real negative situation turned positive for me. And I think it is for him and for his contribution to the team. I think it's going to work out very nicely. And those are things that I think should encourage you, that should give you hope, that should tell you when the other challenges come, because they will. That's not the end of the injuries that this team is going to have to deal with this year. Certainly not even close to the end of the adversity they'll have to overcome. And if they're already figuring that out, and growing and getting a little bit better and able to execute situations in a little different fashion when it really matters to finish a game off, you know, that's a step in the right direction. So it may take them a little longer than teams that have more experience and don't have as many injuries, but I think they're going to get there. And this game at Air Force on October 12th is a big opportunity to put that on display. You're going up against a team on the road at altitude, with a unique offense that's very difficult to defend, that if you're going to defend successfully requires trust and supreme execution, assignment perfect football on the defensive side of the ball. And I don't know if there is a tougher test in college football than going into one of those kind of games with a team that doesn't have all that much experience as far as the personnel that are actually out there. So that probably has a chance to be as telling a test or as revealing a situation as any game on Fresno State's schedule.
Paul, I agree with that. Also, what I find interesting is, and I do understand why people are saying this, it's a great time to have an extra week to prepare. That's correct. But there are a couple things about that. One is when you have the bye week on the other side of playing a team like Air Force, you have a chance to get yourself back in the proper mode again, because we'll talk to Cam about it tomorrow. I know he's coming up with CG today, as always, but Cam will talk about this, I'm sure. You have to not only prepare differently when you play Air Force, but then you, as you know, Paul, have to forget that in a big hurry and get right back to playing the other D you played before. Otherwise, the hangover from the change and how you have to approach things, because it is so assignment heavy when you play a club like that, can mess you up for weeks to come. So the good news is you have 2 weeks to prepare. The bad news is you turn right around and go back to more traditional play the next week after that. But focusing on this alone, and Tedford brought it up, you and I know that the Bo Morgans and the D. Dallas's of the world would drive you nuts with this option. They would drive you crazy. And I'm not saying that right now you've got a quarterback that is of that level, because there are very few that ran it the way those gentlemen did. But you also have, as Tedford said last night to Andrew Martin, the insider, not just the triple option, it is the quadruple option, because they're actually throwing it effectively now. How tough is that? And Paul has the dogs ready to go. You cannot stop this man. When you tell him to have Fresno State's D to go, he just takes them right out of the kettle and says, let's go. But anyway, how tough is it going to be, Paul, to handle all four aspects of what Air Force is doing, and they're doing it really well right now.
They are doing it really well. It's going to be a real challenge, especially if Fresno State has trouble putting pressure on the quarterback. I mean, those dogs are going to be barking all night if that's the situation.
Boom,
and I don't know how you left Mike Thiessen out of the equation, Tony. I mean, Modesto's own and the nephew of a great Bulldog baseball player, Tim Thiessen, and Mike's still on staff there. Was a great baseball player at the academy, too. But that's Hammond right. is that same kind of athlete, Tony. I mean, he's dangerous. And he's healthy. I mean, I had my doubts after the Boise game. Would he be healthy? But clearly he played, you know, wonderfully in the win over San Jose State. He's going to be a handful. And I think another part of that game is going to be, can the offense be more effective to keep the defense fresh? And one thing Fresno State's done a pretty good job of so far this year is winning that time of possession battle and, you know, kind of dictating the pace of the game. But, for instance, in the New Mexico State game, you know, you get the easy score with Hokett, you know, on that first drive where Reyna looks sharp. They're moving down the field. They go 86 yards. Hokett pounds it in. You say, okay, that set the tone. The next three possessions were all punts. And, you know, in a game against Air Force, I think you'd really like to see Fresno State dictate the pace, keep the ball away from that Air Force offense, keep that defense fresh and focused and ready for that challenge. And an offense that can sustain drives, that can establish a little more of a running game with the running backs than what we've seen so far, that can convert third downs. Again, this team, I mean, the guys on this team are going to get sick of hearing the rest of us talk about struggles on third down. But that's a huge issue, and that's such a winning indicator in college football at any level of football. And that is not something this team has gotten great at yet. So, you know, if the Bulldogs can do that in the Air Force game, that offensive improvement could have a pretty big impact on how the defense fares against that triple or quadruple option, whatever you want to call it.
Right. I also want to ask you quickly here, you brought up Mooty. I know that the guys have a few days off and they'll get back to practice, etc. This would have been a normal day off anyway for the team, but a little bit of extra time because of the bye week. But anything new that you know of in regard to the long-term prognosis? Because I've heard so many different things about exactly what the availability might be of the immediate games that Fresno State has on its schedule.
Well, I think it's too early to tell, Tony. I think, you know, you maybe after the bye week, maybe in the middle of next week, we'll have a better indicator, see how much progress he's made. But with Natane, he's such a competitor. He's been through injuries before, and so you have that track record of how has he handled that, how has he attacked that. I mean, people forget before we ever saw him step on the field, and most people are introduced to him really in that game at Alabama where he took on an All-American and looked like the toughest guy on the field. He had already come off an Achilles injury before that game. So, you know, before he ever suited up in a game, he had dealt with that. Now he's dealt with that again. Now he's got this latest situation. And sometimes with a guy like that who's that tough, a doctor's initial assessment, which is based on the average case or the reasonable expectation, ends up being off in one direction or another. If a guy's got that really, really strong drive and the discipline to not go too fast, to not do things that are going to compromise his rehab, if a guy is that focused and determined and dialed into it, you know, sometimes you shave a week or two or three off that initial prognosis. So I think at this point, it's way too early to say. The coaches are going to monitor it closely. Natane is, you know, going to be on his best behavior, not try to do too much, but do enough to give himself a chance to be on the field as soon as possible. And again, you know, in my mind, hey, if you get him back for Air Force, that would be a dream come true, but might not be realistic. If you have him back for that five-game stretch in November that's really going to decide where your season ends up, I think you'd take that. If you were offered that right now, I think you'd take it.
Right.
And that's just me talking.
Paul, appreciate the time. Tell the dogs we're not going to let them out for another week and a half or so, but you know what? Nice to know they're ready to go. Nice to know you have them prepped and ready for the trip. You're all going to Colorado Springs at the same time, correct? Family, the dogs, everybody going together, is that right?
Yeah. Believe it or not, Tony, that is just one dog, but that's what happens.
Is that only one?
Wow.
Well, okay.
If she sees a squirrel, it's on.
Well, you know what? I got two cockapoos in the other room that are worth more than I am worth. Trust me, both literally and figuratively in this family, Paul. If there were pecking orders, financially or emotionally, I finish behind the dogs, a distant fourth in the family at the moment. So I certainly understand. On that high note, I'll let you go, my friend. Take care. Have a great week. I'll see you.
I know the feeling, Tony. Have a good one.
I know you do. All right, guys. Paul Loeffler. We'll take a break, come back, wrap it up on 50,000 Watt 940 ESPN.